Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. And as we talked about yesterday on the program briefly, as the world watched in horror as those people were killed at Charlie Hebdo in Paris, very little thought or major commentary has been given in our national and Western press to what's happening in Nigeria, where perhaps up to 2,000 people were slaughtered by the Boko Haram and the war that's raging over there. And as somebody who called in yesterday said, this has a lot to do with Black Lives Matter in this world. And we are talking to two people now to kind of wrestle with what's happening there and get an understanding of what's going on. Once again, we are joined by Dr. Alem Hailu, who is Associate Professor of African Studies at Howard University. Dr. Hailu, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And Adote Akwe is with us, who is Managing Director of Government Relations at Amnesty International USA. And Adote, welcome. Good to have you with us as well. Oh, he's not here yet? Okay. And 410-319-8888, you can join us here. You can also write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. So, Dr. Hailu, let me start with you. This is a very kind of confusing situation for most people to understand because reports are so varied. But what do you know about what is really happening?
I think, as we've discussed this in the past, this is what's going on in the global village, where we see phenomena of polarization of identities, politicization of religion, the rise of extremist groups, and then you have the interconnection of globalization, where insurgents anywhere come to threaten other nations that might feel insulated. In like what happened in France didn't start in France. It's a reflection of what's going on in the world. So what's going on in Nigeria also is connected to that in economic terms, political terms, and in terms of how the ideas of extremism are taking root in a way which go contrary to traditions of that all faiths that respected other groups, that respected differences, and this is what we're seeing now. And as you pointed in your introduction, the phenomenon in France or in America, everywhere, gets attention when it gets with the death of casualties in the West. But this is almost a fraction of what goes on. And like you said, over 3,000 have been killed in just this year by Boko Haram, 200 girls that were kidnapped, as you remember, a few months ago. But not enough attention is being paid. And this is not to blame the world for what's going on there, but as part of the global problem, this should make us think, and I think what he said in the introduction was echoed by the bishop in central Nigeria of Jos, who said we should have the same spirit of respecting lives in France and in Nigeria. When people are killed, we should rise and try to address the problems, you know, collectively as members of humanity.
Adote, welcome to the program. It's good to have you with us as well.
From Amnesty. Thank you very much.
And I did say your name correctly, right? Adote, is that right?
That is correct.
Good. What do we know about what's really happening? I've seen reports from the Nigerian government that say only a couple hundred people were killed. I've seen reports from Amnesty talking about upwards of 2,000 people were slaughtered in this small city in Nigeria. What do we know?
Well, we've spoken with a number of witnesses. Physical access, obviously, is extremely risky and too dangerous. So, but we are talking with people who have fled the region and who are close to it. And, you know, we're going to be coming up with a press briefing probably later this week that we'll use some satellite imagery, hopefully, to try and basically confirm, you know, that this is not 150. It's a terrible slaughter and one of Boko Haram's biggest attacks. But the Nigerian government has a record of not only outright denying that there's a crisis, but also underreporting the scale of the violence committed by Boko Haram as well as by their own forces.
And I think part of this underreporting by the Nigerian government seems to be the utter, what's the word I'm looking for? Not weakness is not the correct word. The inability of Nigerian government to address any of this. That even though it has perhaps the largest military in the continent of Africa, it has a military that's ineffective and can't address what's going on in Boko Haram, just in terms of the immediate situation. Dr. Hailu, I mean, I think that that's part of the issue here, is just the absolute ineffectiveness of the government itself.
Yes, that's the tragedy. You have Nigeria as the largest economy in Africa, 26th in the world, with multi-billion in revenues from oil. It shouldn't even be bothered by not getting military help from the outside world. It's just something it should take care of. But its failure has been clear, and part of it has been its attempt to play down the problem rather than owning up to it before the world can join in. They have to really take charge and show interest and commitment to it. And if Hollande didn't pull the world leaders into it, then nobody would come, you know. So we see that problem. I think the government doesn't want to be seen as weak or as unable to solve this, so it places down. But by doing that, it's hurting itself and its image also.
So Arate, I want our listeners to get an understanding of what is really going on from what your workers nearby on the ground can tell us, and why there seems to be such a huge surge in power by Boko Haram and the surrounding countries of Chad, Cameroon, and Nigeria seem so powerless to address any of this.
Well, I think, you basically have an armed insurgent group of which we don't have any real hard numbers about its strength. It is clearly managing to supply itself. There are all sorts of different criminal networks and, you know, drug networks. And, you know, Boko Haram obviously has an industry or a practice of abduction. So they, by whatever means, and even reportedly potentially from some sympathizers within the Nigerian military, they are able to, they do have access to weapons, and they have clearly gone from being, you know, a small group of disgruntled people to, as you said, threatening not only northern Nigeria but Cameroon and Chad. And what I think Professor Hailu just said is really the critical issue, is that the Nigerian military should not have problems of running out of ammunition or out of weapons, and but they are, and that's linked to our larger issues of corruption and accountability and the lack of accountability. And that's a problem that goes back decades, and there's never been any effective reform or cleanup of the Nigerian military, even going back to the 1990s when, you know, they did terrible things under Sani Abacha, the former head of state, who committed terrible atrocities in the Niger Delta. So in addition to corruption impacting the capacity, there's also the low morale. And I think this is the really dangerous thing, because on the one hand, you have the leadership that says this is not a big problem, we can take care of it. And even when they do ask for support, they want it on their terms. You know, they just, you know, give us the weapons and let us do what we want to do. And, you know, the United States and other countries have said, wait a second, you know, there are credible reports about your troops having massacred people, at least 5,000 in the last 5 years, and as well, you know, committing torture and detentions. What can you say about those allegations, and what investigations have you done? And they haven't done anything. And I think today's statement of only 150 people being killed, and, you know, Boko Haram clearly displaying its, you know, very, very cruel nature, is basically yet another argument to support them and give them a blank check. And that's unfortunately not worked, and that's why this crisis is so dangerous.
So, Dr. Hailu, I'd just like us to wrestle with for a minute, just as the here. And listeners, please join us at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. I was saying to one of my producers yesterday, just imagining ourselves living in one of the villages on the border between Nigeria and Chad or Cameroon, and having to live with this, and having to live with Boko Haram, the danger of them just coming into a village and not being stopped, unless, like happened the other day in Cameroon, where the Cameroonian army seemed to push back, and at least from the reports, that Boko Haram suffered heavy losses in that engagement with the Cameroonian army, but what can the response be? I mean, there are people who are literally being slaughtered, women taken off and raped, and women and children and elderly people being killed because they can't move quick enough. As one report came from this village that just experienced this slaughter. What can response be? How do we make a response?
Yes, I think that's the question all of us are wrestling with, because here we have a tragedy, a most powerful, economically powerful nation in the continent, unable to withstand insurgents, where, like you said, thousands of people are killed. Close to 3 million people have been displaced by this. 3 million people,
right,
in these areas, where they just freely go into places, and where the villagers live in terror as they haven't been able to move. So you'd think there would be an emergency and a determination to address this collectively. By the way, I agree with you that the government has to take the blame for not organizing and for not mobilizing the resource. For example, one of the things they say is, since the civilian government took over in 1999, there hasn't been any change in their outfitting their arms. They're still dealing with arms, both in 1983. So, and they have problems where even the military couldn't fight because they weren't equipped. The wives in some of the garrisons demonstrated that they didn't want their husbands to go be killed without being equipped. But one of the generals said, "We will whip the women if they don't behave." So you have that impunity, that sense of being unable to address this and see the gravity of it on the government part. But we should also not forget that this is a larger problem of the political elites, of the opposition groups, because this became an issue. You have in there issues of regional imbalance. You have the north, predominantly Muslim north, feeling cheated of its rights to political power, because the current regime, the current president Zhao, from a minority in the south, was supposed to have stayed only one term. So they say until that they get the presidency back, they want to cooperate with it. But this is where the political elites should come together, where there was an op-ed in the Washington Post this week, where one man said, was criticizing the Washington Post editorial about criticizing the government, but he said, how about the opposition, where Buhari, who was leading the opposition in 2011, said that if they didn't win the election, there would be mayhem, and 800 people were killed, even though it was deemed okay by observers. So you see how they're using that, both groups, generals on the field, political leaders in the north, others from different groups. So this is the tragedy you see, and they have to address that. But in the immediate, like you said, there has to be a way of ending this madness, because it's almost something that's insulting not just Nigerians but the world community.
And Adetel, what is Amnesty International's view on this and how they address this, which they do in places across the globe? From what I've been reading, if you look at the Council on Foreign Relations, they say that in the last 5 years, 10,000 people were killed, that over a million people are displaced inside Nigeria and across the borders in Chad and Cameroon, that this hundreds and hundreds of children have no families to go to, that they don't, and the agencies are overwhelmed by that. I mean, I really want people to understand how deep this is, and I'm curious what AI says about what the response should be.
Well, we cannot overestimate how both the gravity, as you those numbers are roughly jive with ours. We have 5,000 being killed by Boko Haram in 2014 alone.
Right.
We also have the number of over a million being displaced is also consistent. And, it's not just that. It's the destruction to livelihoods. It's the destruction of access to education. In other words, it's generation, a whole generation in the north that is basically being swept aside and being put in a place where they can't be participants in the future of the country on a fair basis. The response, I think, for us is that, twofold. One, obviously, there has to be a way to protect this civilian population, which of course then calls into question the need for reform of the Nigerian military, accountability, restoration of the rule of law. There have not been any trials of Boko Haram suspects. In all of this slaughter, they've not been able to bring a case or prosecute a case and convict someone in front of a judicial process that meets their standards, and that's also a dramatic statistic. So, but at the front of this is the political leadership Professor Halu refers to, which is the Nigerian political elites, both the ruling party as well as the opposition as well as the military, all need to have a serious rethink of how they govern, how they're accountable, and how they protect, the fundamental rights of the civilian population, of people living within Nigeria, and that's unfortunately being pushed aside because of next month's elections. It's being distorted because of all of the money that's being and the issue of corruption. And the international community can push and demand, but in the end, if it doesn't happen from inside, it's going to be very difficult to see how this is effectively addressed, how it's prevented from spreading to Cameroon and to Chad, and then really becoming a major, major issue of national collapse, because none of the states surrounding Nigeria are very strong in terms of their militaries or in terms of their governance. And, it would be tragic to see Boko Haram effectively destabilizing more than one country.
Well, we'll come back to this in the coming days and weeks, because this is a very critical subject, and we need to kind of really focus on this particular area of the world that much of the media, even though they're covering it, it's not covering it in the depth it needs. I just heard Adote Akwe, who is the Managing Director of Government Relations at Amnesty International USA. And once again, we have been joined by Dr. Alem Hailu, who is Associate Professor of African Studies at Howard University. And I want to thank you both so much for taking your time with us here on the Mark Steiner Show on WEAA.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing focus to this important issue.
We will continue to do it, too. Thank you so much for all your work. We're going to take a very brief break here. On our way to break, we're hearing It's All Right, Ma, I'm Only Bleeding by Bob Dylan, from his album Bringing It All Back Home, which started recording today on this day in 1965. We'll be right back with our weekly look at food farming in our environment and sound bites. Stay with us. We'll be right back. There's no sense in trying.